You're listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax. Today we have our 2024 predictions for web development, JavaScript, server-side, frameworks, tooling, CSS, the ecosystem, and AI, all in general. We're going to be talking about things we think will happen this year. We do this every single year, and we revisit it in December to see how right or how wrong we were. And quite honestly, we nailed it last time. So I'm going a little bit more wild with my predictions this year, just to see if I can manifest some of these things. How you doing, Scott?
Oh, I'm doing good, man. Feeling, feeling the Christmas spirit. I know you're getting this one in January 3rd, but we're recording this the week before Christmas. So, I'm feeling it, man. We got the elves on the shelf are just hopping around the house. Our kids are going absolutely feral, and we are doing our best to hold on before the holidays. So, yeah, that's how I'm doing. But hey, if you're getting wild with your code, like we're getting wild with these predictions, you're going to want to have a tool to help you solve your bugs. Not only solve your bugs, but solve your performance issues, solve your questions, your mysteries that you have going on in your code base. Hey, why does this thing function this way? Or why is one user in particular telling me this happens when they go to the website? You get all that kind of visibility and more with a tool like Sentry, which provides things like session replay. It provides error and exception handling and tracking services. It provides performance metrics, query metrics. You can see how fast or how buggy your thing is at any time. So if that sounds awesome to you, it is awesome. Check it out at sentry.io.
All right. So we're going to start with JavaScript and all of our predictions. So you want to kick it off there with the first prediction?
Yeah. I think types in JavaScript will have some movement. You know, we said this in our last predictions, and sure enough, there was, you know, movement in some regard. I believe it's in stage one now. I would like to see more movement, more public movement, more movement where people are talking about it. Honestly, I don't know what the effort is to take to going to get this to stage two, so I don't want to just say, oh, it's going to be stage two. But I would love for this to keep marching forward because I think this is a worthwhile API that I personally, you know, am in favor of.
Yeah, I don't think that they are in any rush to get this thing out the door because this is forever. And we saw this with ECMAScript modules. We saw this with promises where it took years and years of deliberation and going back and forth on the API. Because like we might be writing JavaScript in 10, 20 years. We might not be, you know, but if we're going to go as far to add types to the language, and the proposal for everyone listening, the proposal is called types as comments, which essentially means that it's not a type as a comment. It doesn't like look like JS doc. It looks like TypeScript, but the browser simply will render out the JavaScript, or when the browser parses the JavaScript, it just takes the types and throws them out the door. So the browser's not actually going to type check your JavaScript, but it allows us to author and use tools that can parse that specific data. So yeah, I bet we'll see some major movement this year. There really wasn't a whole lot talked about it last year. And I bet we'll see stage one at least two meetings where they talk about it as well.
Yeah. Wait, I think it already is in stage one, Wes.
Is it? Yeah, because stage... What is stage one? Stage one is where it's proposed, or...
No, I think when it's been...
We always talk about it. Here we go. Stage one, which is make the case for the addition, describe the shape of the solution, and identify potential challenges. So,
and I think they changed the name from types as comments, even though we did that whole message, because it's now listed as type annotations, which I don't know when that change was made, but I don't remember seeing it being listed as type annotations before. But
interesting. We can go back and look at the source. March 31st, 2022 was renamed. So that was almost 2 years ago, it was renamed. Nobody noticed. Types of comments to types type annotations. Okay. Crazy. This proposal is over 3 years old. So, yeah, it's gonna be a long time.
Time flies when you're having fun.
No kidding. Next prediction I have here is Temporal API will ship in one browser. So Temporal is the new data API that will likely replace a lot of your use of the data API in JavaScript. And it has a whole bunch of really nice utility functions for working with dates, the ability to add days, add months. So it's like, it's kind of like the data API we've always wanted, a little bit of like Moment.js added into it. And there we're starting to see, like, the Temporal API has been around for a while. They were waiting on the new ISO specification for how to basically timestamps that include what calendar you're in and what time zone you're in. So that's been approved. So we're starting to see it drop in Safari. Safari's just pushed out a couple. Every single new version of Safari technical preview, they've added some. So, like, that's it. Not in Chrome, not in Firefox, but I bet this year we're going to see one of these browsers say, you know what, we're done with the Temporal API, or at least, I don't want to say 80%. I'm going to say the whole thing is going to be shipped in at least one browser.
Yeah, and I think at this stage, if you're looking at this, it could be Safari, given that they have a big head start at this point.
Yeah. Next one I have here is perf tooling gets easier to understand. I think that I have this in conjunction with a little bit of perf pushback, because sometimes people just go gunning for the Lighthouse score and that's it. And sometimes life is a little bit more complicated than that. So I think people will start to push back on just this one metric. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason they'll be able to do that is because they'll be able to have a little bit more tooling that is easier to understand, flame graphs and whatnot, where it's like, all right, regular people can just look at this, or you can run some sort of tool through your output and it'll tell you specifically what is causing the issue.
Yeah, get some AI tools in here. Hey, what do I do to make this fast?
Yes, exactly.
Next one, you know, this next one is, this is not related to JavaScript entirely, but CSS will continue to add features that will make JavaScript less necessary, which it has been and continually has been.
It has.
Yes, it has been. The has API doing a lot of work there.
How many has jokes have we had this year?
we has had a lot of those. It's been endless here. And what's interesting to me about this debate is that, like, JavaScript haters will always use this as being like, yes, the browser can do so much. If you knew how to use the browser, you wouldn't have to use JavaScript. And meanwhile, it's like, three APIs that had landed that single day. And there, you know, the CSS has gotten a lot better. We'll just say that. And because it's continuing to get better, we get to use less JavaScript. And I think that's a good thing for everybody, even people who like JavaScript, because then we can use JavaScript to do cooler things, like, you know, these neat MIDI APIs or, you know, yeah, artificial intelligence stuff. Who knows?
Let's talk about frameworks. I believe 2024 is the year of the server. So 2023, we started to see a lot of these frameworks say, maybe we should start to render on the server. Now we're starting to see, obviously, the big one, React Server Components, saying by default, everything is rendered on the server. And then you have the ability to opt in to client side with the use client tag. It's going to be a bit of a rough move, I think, for a lot of applications, but I think it's going to be a big year for people moving to the server. It's going to mean snappier applications. It's going to mean a little bit less 100 layers to get your data to the actual client.
Yeah. You know what? I think a big thing is, you know, we'll see some continued trends. Like AngularJS has just been kind of quietly shipping, and maybe not so quietly.
You mean Angular? Are you doing that intentionally to get the pitchforks out of us?
Just confused. We talked to Mark Texan. I got the whole breakdown, but, you know, it's just when you got two things in your brain, right, that are so closely connected, I don't think I'm ever going to get that right. I think I'm going to doubt myself every single time I say the correct one. So this is my specificity, is AngularJS. I think you know, Vue is also going to continue to ship. But, you know, one of the things that I think is that it might become more standard and standard for them to have a compile time mode like a Svelte or a Solid or a Million JS, because as we've seen, the perf seems to be there. I just can't imagine, given how Vue tends to take the best from all worlds, that this won't become the norm for writing Vue at some point. On the same regards, Svelte version 5 is going to ship, obviously, but it's going to be very, 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 very fast. It's going to be convincingly fast. Svelte Kit version 2, I think that's already out. So I can take this one off the list.
I upgraded our, it just came out like a couple days ago, and I tried to upgrade our site to it, and we're pretty close. There's one thing with a plugin that we're just waiting for a new version to ship, but the NPX whatever upgrade that Svelte Kit put out, it's amazing. It just like, it updated our code in like 18 different places and
yeah,
it all just worked.
Let me just say one quick thing about the Svelte community that I sincerely appreciate beyond other communities. When they issue breaking changes, almost every time they issue a code mod, and I've had those code mods do great work for me. So people who are out there shipping code mod utilities, here's another one. Sentry, our employer, they have a wizard to install Sentry on a Svelte Kit site, and it just modded my code for me and put the code with my all of the relevant things that I wanted directly for me in the right files, and I didn't have to do anything. Hey, man, if you have a CLI wizard or a code mod, that's a pretty sweet value add to me.
Mm-hmm. Astro, what's our prediction there? I think it's funny. We've been talking about Astro many years, and we've seen many iterations of what Astro is, but it seems like recently it's been popping a lot lately. Now they're like a full stack framework, you know, a lot of people are like, this makes a lot of sense to me. So I think Astro is going to have a good year. What about you?
Yeah, it's tough to say because I think Astro is compelling, and I think people who use Astro like it. For instance, I was on that For Devs One App Idea show on Jason Langstorff's YouTube channel. And most people used Astro, even if they didn't use React. And so I think devs are using it and they're liking it. But it's all about if that usage will continue to grow into something meaningful. Because there's always going to be frameworks that do something compelling and interesting that just can't get the market share. And Astro's fighting a big battle, but the coolest thing about Astro is that, again, you can bring your own front-end framework. And there's times where I felt like maybe Astro would have been the right thing to build on because, you know, there's so much flexibility there. That said, you know, I think it's a great platform. I would like to think it would pop, but I'm not sure it does just because I don't know.
Yeah,
is it enough to draw people away?
It's true. It's got to be enough. Like people, you hear that a lot. You hear a lot of developers complaining about React, but what are all the big companies using? You know, it's React. And is it that much of a pain point that people are going to want to switch? Like, is it going to, I felt like that was the same thing with like 11D and
so, what was the other so many.
A lot of these frameworks where it's like, it's popping in the developer community. And of course, there's always going to be a bunch of like use cases where somebody used it for a big e-com site or something like that. But is it going to push past that into a like, holy smokes, someone's using Astro for X, Y, and Z, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
We talked about the React server components. It's going to, I think like React server components have been around for, what is it? Probably like 2 years they've been talking about it, right? Go back to our one of our shows. I think it was, we did it right at the end of the year. But now finally seeing it ship in a few different frameworks. So obviously Next.js is pushing it out now. I have a prediction about React. And it comes from me playing with React state management and then playing with coming from the Svelte site that we built. So enough experience in both. And the one thing that I really still miss from our Svelte Git site when going into something like Next.js is the import-export state management, being able to have simpler state management tools for storing all of your data. And part of the React server components is this form actions API that allow you to know when a form is submitting, what function it needs to call on the server side, any errors that happen. And I was like, kind of like looking at that, being like, wow, like that's the first time that React has really gone past it being a library to render stuff and handle clicks into, you know, something's happening on the server. How do you communicate with the actual server? So like, I almost wonder, and I'm predicting that React is going to maybe not roll out because it takes a lot longer than that, but we're going to have something different than use state and use context for being able to manage our data. Maybe it's signals.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'll chime in on this and maybe augment it or add on how I could see this happening. I think if React themselves were to announce this, they would announce it and then maybe like 4 years down the line, it would be released because that seems to be the flow these days. But I would say if anybody's likely to do this, maybe that seems like a Next.js territory or a Vercel launches a Next state, you know, something that
I wish they would.
They obviously see how signals are a really good pattern. They're clearly a good pattern. Everybody's using it. And even signal or observable-based state in React world itself is very popular, but it's not the de facto. And I think that is something that Svelte really has going for it. It has total control over those things. And once y'all see the new runes APIs, Wes, because I know you saw the initial runes in Svelte, the initial announcement of runes, which is basically their new state management-based solution. Mm-hmm. Once you see the updates to that, I think you're going to be saying, dang, this is what React needs. Because the way that they're implementing signals inside of Svelte right now for the next version of it, it's I think just time over time again, when I'm working in state and anything, I think I really love to have those runes right now or any sort of signal-based architecture that's a little bit nicer than what I'm working with. So
yeah
it would be interesting to me. And honestly, this is one of my biggest annoyances with React overall. You never know what you're getting into when you open up a React project in terms of state. Is somebody using a third-party solution like ZooStand? Are they using something like context and possibly using context poorly, or maybe they're using context extremely. You know, there's so many different ways to tackle state in React. You know, you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah, I totally agree. And here's another point of why I think it's going to happen is Vercel is sponsoring this project called Waku, W-A-K-U. And this is a new React framework based on React server components. So from the ground up with it. And the author of Waku is also the author of ZooStand and Jotai. How do you say that?
Jotai.
And both of those are React state management libraries. Maybe Vercel saying, you know what? Let's test it out on this Waku project. And if that's really the way that we need to go, is not to say that this Waku is going to be implementing state management, but you got to think, like, if the author of ZooStand and Jotai is like, now it's time for a React framework, you got to bet that those things are going to be work really well together.
There's one person or group of developers who I would trust to make a new React framework, it's these folks. So cool. I've never heard of Waku until this moment. Now I'm like very excited about this.
Yeah, it's I don't know if I have the energy for another React framework.
Oh, I
but
don't.
I am excited don't. That somebody is looking at it. Also, so as well, Remix. I predict Remix is going to move away. And maybe I shouldn't say predict. I feel like this is going to happen. And I'm pretty sure by reading all the GitHub threads and everything is that Remix will move away from page-based loaders, which is kind of what SvelteKit does, to component loaders. Because I was talking about this on Twitter where like, I love the page-based loader, but I hate that it's attached to the page, you know?
Yes.
And then I want it to be attached to the component. And Remix is moving more towards the Next.js way of doing it. So I predict that there's kind of three major frameworks now sort of working on this React Server component. So we'll see what comes out of that.
I would love if SvelteKit implemented component-based loading functions. I'd have no idea if that's ever even a possibility. But that's something I would really like. I don't even know if they're talking about that, but yeah. So let's talk about server-side JS. I think something that we started hearing about even about halfway through the year, and the first time I heard about it, Wes dropped it to me, HanoJS. I think this is going to be one of those projects that becomes more ubiquitous, more used. I think, you know, HanoJS has a lot of positive features about it, and I believe that as a compatible, fast web framework that works anywhere, gotta feel like this is gotta be the one you pick, right?
Yeah. So for anyone who hasn't heard us talk about it a million times, Hano is the new Express, meaning that we now have browser standards for request, response, and fetch. And all of our servers need to be built on top of these standards. So Remix is, Astro is, Next.js is, every single time that you SvelteKit is, every single time that you have a server-side request or response route, they all add a little bit of extra stuff on top, which is fine. HanoJS does as well, some nice stuff for sending JSON and for handling errors, so you don't have to do the whole headers. That's kind of annoying. But like, this is it. This is the standard for doing it. And you can take a function that is supposed to run in SvelteKit on the server and move it over to Next.js with little to no movement. And HanoJS is the like standard framework. You're going to be able to deploy it to Bun, to Dino. You're going to be able to deploy it to, there's a Node.js adapter, which I think is hilarious. I think it's hilarious because it's not Node.js by default. It's anything by default. And if you want to run a Node.js server, you have to npm install the Node.js server for it as well. So big fan of it. I reach for Hano every single time that I need something. But I also find myself saying, do I need Hano or do I just whip up a Next.js, Remix, or SvelteKit site? And just that these meta frameworks are almost better because now I have file-based routing and now I can do my client side as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And then at that point, it's like, what are they using? And that's what you're using, right?
Exactly. My next prediction, Node will introduce TypeScript support via loaders. So I think we've talked about how this is technically possible, but I bet, especially all the heat that Dino and Bun have been given Node lately, I bet like a easy win is for Node to just ship built-in TypeScript support via a loader. And it's fine because they don't have to make any, that you can use your own loader if you really want to, and you can opt out of it if you really want to, or you have to opt into TypeScript if you really want to. But like, I was thinking about that the other day. It's like NPM is not part of Node, you know? NPM is a totally separate project, and it's owned by GitHub, but they ship NPM with Node when you install it, right?
Yeah.
So like, why can't you make some, like, that's an opinionated decision that has helped the community. And I bet we'll see that in 2024, Node will ship TypeScript support.
I think even shipping it as a loader is the right call, like you said, because then you're not having to essentially, it's a less of a big leap that way, you know?
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be in there forever, or like it can be in there forever. But if there's something new that comes along, then it's not necessarily a big deal to move along with it. Other predictions here, on the Cloudflare episode, we talked about, will there ever be a standard router? And somebody sent me, there actually is a proposal for URL pattern matching, which is basically like /episode, or like on the Syntax website, we have a pattern match, which is /show/ a random number, 0 through 800, and then / the slug of the URL. And those URLs are matched deep in SvelteKit when you hit that URL, right? You've ever written ExpressJS or HanoJS route, you'll have written those as well. So there's now a proposal, and I'm predicting that that will be approved and implemented this year, because again, we're all writing route matchers, whether it's through file, even if you're using like the folder structure routing, the way that you name your folders will be standardized by this. And I think that is so cool that you could then name your folder specific things in any framework and it will be the same.
And that API is the URL pattern API. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah. Did you find it?
Well, I found a URL pattern API that is shipped in Chrome in 2021, but no support in Safari or Firefox. And that's browser support. So I don't even know what node support looks like.
The URL pattern standard. Yeah. Last updated about 2 weeks ago. So it might not be. Sometimes Chrome does ship things in order to just test them out. I'll link to the actual GitHub that shows you everything. That's pretty cool, though. There's a whole way for matching protocols. Last one, Bun releases full node compat. Jared Sumner, author of Bun, tweeted this out, that their only goal for next year is to get full node compat. And it's kind of interesting that everybody is gunning for node compat. And I don't see that as a bad thing. I see it as, okay, eventually we're going to be able to say, it's like, oh, what browser do you use? You use Firefox, Safari, or Chrome? We're going to say, hey, like, what are you running your app with? Bun, Dino, or Node? And there's a lot that needs to happen in the nitty gritty. There's a lot of little edge cases here and there, but I think we're getting pretty close.
Yeah. It is interesting that everybody's targeting Node compat and Node's shipping, right? Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's kind of two standards, right? There's the Winter CG standard, which is the open web standard that we're trying to standardize on. And then there's also the Node standard, which is, we also want it to work with Node apps that people have already written.
Yeah, totally. Next one is tooling. So, you know, I think there's going to be some major space here in the linter and formatting space. You know, we've already seen quite a bit of movement here. Biome being the one used formerly named Rome, being the one that people are actually using to some degree right now. And another one, which we just heard about, OXC, being a really fast one in Rust. However, I did some digging and they have the OXC project, I think, is kind of dead in the water because they explicitly state they have no intention of adding HTML support. So are you going to install two different linters and formatters on your system, like one for HTML support and one for not? I would just stick with Prettier for everything. So, you know, we'll see about Biome and what they end up supporting, because I know their support, they have a nice little support matrix that they're filling in, which I'll have a link to, where they don't support HTML, but I don't think they've explicitly stated. It says HTML super languages support once these parsers are available. So they're clearly going to add HTML support, Biome will. But OXC explicitly states that it's not on their roadmap and they have no plans. So if we're going to do a head-to-head OXC versus Biome, I think OXC might have some juice right now.
Yeah.
But I think Biome is the one to win out amongst these two.
Isn't it wild how, for what, 3 years? Maybe we need to give context. There was a project called Rome, which was meant to be an all-in-one build tool, linter, code formatter, what else? All of that stuff in one. And it never took off, you know? And it when they like officially, they ran out of funding and they officially sort of shut it down, one of the old employees or somebody who had worked on it basically forked it. It renamed it to Biome and sort of continued on with the progress. And I feel like I've heard about it like more than I ever heard about Rome in the 3 years in the last 2 weeks. Do you feel the same?
Yeah, you know, there's some drama there, Wes. I don't know how much we want to get into.
Some mama drama.
Yeah, some drama around who took funding and where that funding went. And I think a lot of people are slightly frustrated with the Rome leadership, I will say, in terms of, hey, they had received a lot of funding and basically nothing came out of that funding. And this is the same individual that was behind the whole controversy regarding Babel payments. So I don't want to get too much into it. I don't know the whole story. All I know is that there is some drama, and that's probably why you're hearing about Biome now, because the folks who took over Biome were the ones who were very passionate about the solutions to these problems.
Yeah.
And they had worked really hard on these solutions before having, you know, money get in the way of things. So I think that's probably why they're passionate about it. Now, I will say, if Biome wants to succeed, they got to change that logo, man. I don't know who I got to talk to at Biome, but they got to change that logo.
Yeah, they had Prettier put up a big bounty for writing a formatter in Rust, and Biome came in and swooped it, which is amazing. So, like, they built it. Yeah, it might be the year. Might be the year for Biome. I'm surprised. Like, if you would have told me when this came out, I was like, this is not going anywhere, you know? And I think I was wrong about that.
How about this? I'll have a prediction. Biome will change their logo.
Okay.
That's my prediction.
I like it. Other tooling. I predicted this last year and was incorrect. I'm going to predict it again. We will see a new TypeScript type checker written in something Rust. Go one of these lower level languages. We do have many TypeScript tools, but they simply parse and strip types. There's nothing existing that does the actual type checking for you. It's only written in Node. And for large projects, that can get very, very sluggish. So it's very, very complicated. I do not envy the person that has to dive into all those little edge cases, figuring out how TypeScript's type checking works with all these infers and whatnot, but I bet we will see something with like a couple caveats, maybe like no enum support or only support for new decorators. But someone's gotta help us out here.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Next one you have here is that Lightning CSS pops, and I'll let you defend that one, but I'm going to say Lightning CSS does not pop. That's going to be my prediction.
All right. So Lightning CSS is a CSS parser, transformer, bundler, minifier for CSS, right? And it's written in Rust, super fast, and it's by the author of Parcel.js, which has long been one of the best build tools. It sort of did a lot of stuff Vite did way before Vite was even around. And the reason why I say that is because it's going to be built into some of the upcoming Tailwind stuff. And once it hits that, obviously the installs are going to go to the sky. But also people are going to realize, it's not just auto prefixer or not auto prefixer. It's not just post CSS in this space. You know, there is other tools that can transpile and polyfill and all that good stuff with our CSS. So yeah, I'm saying there.
I think it needs more spark in that value proposition. I think Lightning needs a spark of something to get people more excited about it.
Yeah, you think people need to have more of an issue. You know, that's the other thing is, like, are people complaining about slow CSS? Same with the TypeScript stuff. Are people complaining about slow TypeScript builds? Sometimes. But is the average developer pained that way? Who knows?
Enough to rip out what they have.
Yeah.
To take a chance on something that maybe a lot of people aren't using currently. I don't know. I think they're, you know, I fully believe in the dev behind it to make it pop. But to me, there has to be a little bit something juicier there.
Interesting.
I think another thing is you'll hear more about RSPack and TurboPack. The Webpack folks are really causing a lot of, you know, conversation online about performance, bundling versus not bundling. Vite, is Vite fast or is it slow? You know, there's been a lot of conversation here. And of course, it feels like the people who talk the most about RSpack are the people who are working on RSpack. But I do think that because there's so many Webpack people out there, I think these tools, these Rust-based bundling tools that are use the Webpack APIs, I think they're going to continue to grow or see much more usage, because as people really start to implement and have fully working solutions for what they're already using, but have it be instantly fast compared to how slow Webpack is comparatively, I think they will be sold easily. This, to me, there's enough of a spark here that, and besides, once other projects implement this stuff to a higher degree, you'll just see RSpack and TurboPack take off. And likewise, I think Vite 6 will come out, but just like Vite, it's just going to be filled with more steady improvements to Vite overall, and it'll continue that value prop of being just a great tool. I don't actually, here's a not a bold prediction, but here's a prediction. I don't think Vite will release anything that will knock your socks off in 2024, but I think it's still going to be good.
Yes. And I'm trying to think, like, what would be, what's the Vite killer feature? You know, like it's fast enough for us. We have a very, like, a relatively large syntax. .fm is a relatively large site, you know? And certainly there's websites that are 1,000 times bigger than that and have a million different monorepos in it. But I'm just trying to think, like what are we missing?
Yeah, I'm not imaginative enough to think about what a feature.
I am very happy to not talk about build tooling for an entire year and you know what? Everything's fine. Let's talk about the actual code and the things we're building, you know?
I hear you.
Yeah.
Very much. Yeah, who cares about ESM or any of that stuff? Just let me write the code, have it work, ship it, go.
Yeah.
And likewise, you know, the next section is CSS. I think, here's a big swing, I think contrast color, which formerly named color contrast, I don't know why they changed it. I think color contrast was better name, but who cares? Contrast color will land in Chrome. I think that's easy. Now, I could say it could also land in Safari. I think Safari is one of, that seems like an API they would love to support. So I think a big swing would to say that contrast color lands in Chrome and Safari, but you know, who knows? I think that's an important API that we need in the browser. Also, relative color. I believe this will land in all major browsers. Why? Because it's already in two of them and we got to get it. Relative color will save me so many lines of CSS. Relative color may save me more lines of CSS than any other CSS API has included.
I am very, very excited for that to hit all of the ones. Scroll animation. So we're going to see 2024 is the year of the... I'm going to predict this. I'm going to predict scroll animation does not hit in two production browsers. Said it will hit two production browsers. I'm going to say it's not. Although Apple loves their scrolly animations, though.
Yeah, we don't disagree on things very, but I found myself disagreeing with you quite a bit in this episode, which I think makes for better predictions, considering we're not just going to be like, oh, we were right. Now we get to say Scott was right. In fact, scroll animations did land in two production browsers because, as you said, Apple loves their scrolling transitions. I know that. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. It is funny. We should say which ones, because all the time that I say will land in two production browsers, I think you can read that as it will land in Chrome and Safari, unless, of course, it's already in Firefox.
So I'm going to predict that this is a very generic one, but 2024 will be the year of CSS discovery, because 2023, we got so many new CSS APIs, we can't even list them all. We've probably did like 8 shows this year just on new CSS APIs in general. And the way that those APIs work, we've explained them, but there's these like techniques that you can use them together for UI enhancements, for neat coding ways. We're still finding them out. And I think that's going to be big this year. It's just like, oh, here are some patterns that you can use with these new CSS properties to make better, more accessible, dark mode, light mode websites.
Yes. Yeah. We think about how long we had to find every little pattern or interesting thing and see. I mean, how long did it take for somebody to figure out the lobotomized owl selector? I mean, there are people out there who will discover some wild stuff with the CSS APIs that we have not even begun to uncover. And Wes, you're already doing great work in that space, but I think people will continue to really push the boundaries there. And I agree. I think some of the APIs that are ripe for exploration, SubGrid. Nobody is doing anything interesting with SubGrid right now, mostly because it just dropped and, you know, nobody's really talking about how incredible it is. I think we'll start to see a lot of patterns for SubGrid come out. I think we'll see a lot of people using linear, the linear function for easing curves. That's going to be a big one. Animation composition is a feature that nobody is talking about, but it has support in all major browsers. As of now, I think it came in June. I went back and looked at I did a talk called Fresh Style at Render Atlanta that was all about, here are the new CSS APIs and can you use them today or not? And guess what? I went through that talk to say, all right, which one of these are coming? And most of them dropped in 2023. And I gave that talk in like June. I think it was June. Either way, the second half of the year brought like just about half of the conference talk I did dropped in the browser. So I think these tools, animation composition, linear, SubGrid, even container queries, CSS Grid will continue to find secrets. You know, I learn CSS Grid hacks every single day. So yeah, there's going to be a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah, and we're also getting things like you can animate them now, you know, like just little things make it so much nicer. Ecosystem. Let's talk about like browsers and the way that we consume the web, what that will look like. So I'm going to say Safari will ship three pieces that make a progressive web app. Things that you might think, I didn't think they would ever ship that, you know? One example was like input type of file where you could take a photo. The web share API, I know that it's still a bit of a mess and Scott just went through the pain, but there was some major bugs in the web share API earlier this year, and they got fixed. So I bet there's going to be like three progressive web appy things that I don't think we'll probably ever see notifications on iOS for a PWA. I doubt it. I think it's just too obnoxious. I have it on desktop, and every time I accidentally allow some website to send me notifications, I'm just like, ah, damn it, you know, like it's too abused.
Yeah. But what users actually want notifications beyond like a calendar app? Like I swear, I don't want anything to notify me. I don't want anything to notify me, straight up.
Yeah, me too. And they're just abused for marketing. Super annoying.
Yeah.
So I bet there's going to be some additional things in that space that allow us to do it in the browser. And that's a pretty bold prediction given how much people gnash their teeth at Safari and their intentional... They say they intentionally removing something.
I'm going to say that in regards to maybe some of the comments about the share API, I don't think the share API is getting any better anytime soon. That API is a mess because it's beyond like if you use it on desktop, it's basically worthless no matter what you're using. So yeah. There are some caveats there, but it's almost not even worth it to say. And then you get into the whole thing of now I got to figure out. I gotta reliably track if I'm on a mobile device now, which in itself is hard to do. User agent's unreliable. There's not a lot of great ways to do it. In fact, most places are like, if you want to track if it's a mobile device, use the device pixels to determine. No, that's not a good reason to do this because now you're leaving out iPad support. Because these mobile browser or mobile OS can handle the share mechanisms way better than any of the desktop browsers can. Mm-hmm. You can't rely on it. You just got to kind of ignore it on desktop. And that's kind of a bummer.
No, hold on. One more thing I forgot with the PWA that shipped this year is you can use Apple Pay on Firefox on iOS.
Mm-hmm.
So like that was big. And I hope, can we have Apple Pay on desktop applications as well? As someone who sells stuff on the internet, I would absolutely love that.
Yeah. Another trend, I think we're going to continue to see Firefox usage go down despite every nerd on the internet telling you that they only use Firefox and everybody only uses Firefox. You ever notice that, Wes? I posted a TikTok about anything about Chrome and the comments are all like, who still uses Chrome? LOL. It's all Firefox. And like, and then meanwhile, the next headline is Firefox usage slips to 2%, you know?
Yeah, they're like, out of touch nerd is very frustrating because they don't realize that the entire world now uses computers and mobile apps and devices. And that is a bigger, much bigger segment than you. And there's just some areas of users that are insufferable. I'm a Firefox user. I hope that I'm not the insufferable Firefox user, but like Android, there's a lot of Android users that are in that camp as well, where it's just Android has this a million users. Oh, and then JetBrains users are the worst.
JetBrains, worst.
Oh, they post anything about VS Code.
Have you considered using this expensive text editor instead of the free
one
that you're using?
I'm sure it's amazing. I'm sure it's amazing, but I'm not going to use it. I'm using VS Code. I enjoy it very much. And I realize it's not a full-blown IDE, but it does absolutely everything that I would ever want from an IDE. I don't know. But yeah, this IntelliJ users, Android, I'm probably pissing off a lot of people right now, but very insufferable.
Sure, who else can we throw on this?
Yeah, hold on.
The skewer pile. Yeah,
we've only hit about probably 40% of our audience here. Let's.
Yeah. I will push back on the Android users, because as an Android user, I will tell you, as a former Android user,
yeah,
I will tell you, there was nothing more frustrating than a feature that you had for 10 years.
Yeah.
And then Apple releases it, and then iOS folks are like, this changes everything. And they're like, well,
it does change everything, because like half the world can now use their device in a different way. And like, I realized they probably should have rolled it out earlier. Apple takes forever on everything.
I think it's not that. I think there's a bit of a head in the sand mentality for iOS users who don't look at other systems, where I think the average Android user has a better understanding
of
iOS's limitations and features than the iOS user has of the Android features.
iOS users don't know what they don't know. And
yes,
that's very frustrating. I totally agree with you there.
That's why they're mad. That's why they're mad. I'll tell you that. The WebStorm folks are mad because they paid for a product and they want you to pay for it.
No,
too.
The WebStorm folks are mad because they've had those features for a long, long time. And WebStorm's awesome, but like, you don't have to tell us that you use WebStorm every single time. It's like, sometimes I watch like beginner repair tutorials, like soldering copper 101. And then there's a guy in the comments being like, I've been soldering copper for 76 years. And that's completely, what are you doing? What are you doing watching an intro video?
You got something better to do? Yeah. Yeah. Shouldn't you be soldering?
Yes. I also predict Safari will ship. Safari has passkey support as well. So
yeah,
I think that we will continue to see passkey. I think it's a big year for passkeys. I'm really excited to get that episode out as well.
I think Arc will become a paid product, or there will be a paid tier of Arc. We already talked to them. We know that that's in their plans, but I think it's going to happen in 2024. I have no knowledge of this. Just a prediction. Next prediction, I think we're going to see a lot more WebXR. In that same conversation we were just happening, because nothing happens until Apple does it, Apple releasing the Vision Pro, which even though people laughed at this thing, I think it's going to sell a crazy amount for what it is and how much it costs. And I think a ton of people are going to have their eyes open to XR-based content and types of awesome things you can do for that. For instance, I have an Oculus Quest 3 that has good pass-through. It's not great pass-through, but it's good pass-through. And it doesn't weigh too much, so that way you can wear it for time at a time. And it comes with a virtual desktop software, Wes. So what I can do, I can put on my headset, connect to my laptop that's in front of me, and make a monitor that's 40 feet tall in front of me and use my actual keyboard and mouse. I've done this many times, and it's pretty great. And that's with a cheaper, non-Apple-based device. I know for a fact that this Apple device is going to be really good in the pass-through department. So I think this thing will make people like really wake up to what you can do with XR. And I think there's room in the web for that too.
Let's talk about AI tooling around web development. I think that this is going to be a big year for, like, it's crazy how quick everything changed in 2023. You know, you go back to Christmas time of 2022, I signed up for Midjourney and stayed up till 3 a.m. playing with it.
Yeah.
And here we are 12 months later complaining about Midjourney and it not being good enough, not having a desktop UI, and saying, oh, these other things are way better than it. It's like things that I could never comprehend in my lifetime. 12 months later, I'm complaining about it, you know? So I think we're going to have another big year for that type of stuff, specifically around the generation of websites. So we've saw Vercel has v0.dev. You can take either a prompt or a screenshot and it will convert it into the HTML and CSS that you have. There's another tool I've been playing with called Galileo AI. They added me to their private beta, which is text prompt to design. And it's okay. The designs are a little bit limited. If you look really closely, they all kind of look the same, and they apparently can download to Figma. I downloaded a couple of them. It looks decent. It's not amazing, but it's certainly, I never could have thought that this would have existed a year ago. So I think these tools are going to start getting built. They're going to get built into Figma. You know, they're going to, v0.dev is great for a tweet. And I don't see a lot of people like using it day to day, like we are using the chats. And I think that's going to change this year, where it's actually a tool we use in our day to day, very much like a Copilot autocomplete or a ChatGPT chat. Yes.
ATM machine.
Small models that run in the browser are going to be more commonplace. So this past year has been OpenAI everything. And then we're starting to see a couple other competitors pop up. But I've been dipping into the like Hugging Face via transformers.js, which is a little library runs in the browser. And like some of these models are 8 megs, and you can run text completion, or you can do object detection, or you can do depth detection with some of them. And like I think people are going to start to, same with like libraries. You say, you know what? You don't have to send everything to OpenAI via an API request. Maybe we can run some of this on the server or in the browser because the models are smaller and faster and they can be done for free.
Word.
What else? Easy to train your own model. That's one thing that I think is starting to get a little bit easier, is like, how do you decide like, you can train your own model. I know there's lots of tools out there, but I think it's going to get even easier. Many tools are going to become Sherlocked by OpenAI. Sherlock was like a finder app for OS X, and then Apple rolled out their own version of it. And it was much better, right? So that's if you hear somebody saying it's gotten Sherlocked, meaning that like your app might become
part of the OS.
Yeah, part of the OS or part of OpenAI. Part of the chat. Because like the other day, I was talking to a couple of people on Twitter about like how to compare two images. And I was like, oh yeah, you got to like create them as embeddings and then you can compare the two vectors. And then somebody else was like, or you just send the two images to OpenAI and it will tell you how similar they are. And it's just like, damn, like all that information I gathered on how to compare images visually is like, I spent a lot of time learning that. And now it's, the answer is, you just send them to this model. It'll tell you how close they are.
I feel like that's going to be our reality for a lot of things. All the time I spent learning X, Y, and Z.
Yeah. Oh, well. And then last one I have here, on-prem corporate AI becomes more of a thing. So you're going to start to see your friends who work at these big KPMG or something like that. They're going to have a rack in their thing. And again, not to say that doesn't exist already, but it's going to be more of a thing. People are scared about privacy, but if you can run a box on your VPN or within your own system that has your own AI, it's trained with all of your documents, that will be a major competitive advantage.
Yeah.
That's it for our predictions. We'll do a tiny little hasty coming up in the future, which is your predictions. And then Scott and I will provide our own reactions and commentary to it, because there's certainly some very good takes and certainly some very bad takes. I'm curious to see what they are.
Cool. Well, sick picks and shameless plugs. Do you have a sick pick for us today, Wes?
Yes, I am going to sick pick a robot vacuum that we recently got. So for about 8 months of the last year, I've been having my sights set on this one. I've been waiting for my Amazon affiliate bucks to add up.
Yeah.
I have my like uses page, and if you buy something on there, I'll get a couple bucks from it. And finally, we saved up enough bucks and got this thing. It's the Roborock S8 Ultra. And I know you, I initially looked into it because you said you have a Roborock, right?
Yeah, I have the S7. So I have the last year's version of the same one that you have.
Awesome.
And it's fantastic. Ours is named Lomax after the character from Weekend at Bernie's. Because we love Weekend at Bernie's, and we figured our robot kind of bounces around the house like Bernie from Weekend at Bernie's. So we named it Lomax,
just like
in tribute to Bernie. Yeah.
So this thing does everything. So it basically, the dock has dirty water, clean water, and a vacuum bag, and the thing will go out and it mops your floors, sucks up the dirty water, and keeps it in some dirty water tank. And then every now and then it will go and empty the thing. And then it will empty the vacuum itself. So we've had it for probably 2.5 weeks now. And we run it twice a day. At whenever we're done cooking dinner or after dinner, we just say, hey, go mop the kitchen. And it goes and mops it and does an awesome job. Like, you think, like, is it really going to do a good job mopping and vacuuming? And I'm here to tell you, it's amazing. And you only have to empty the water maybe once every week. Depends on how often you run it and how big your house is and things like that. But it is so good. It charges itself. It empties itself. It mops itself. It has like vibrations built into it. So it'll try to, like, it's not going to scrub your floors. But if you run it often enough, our floors have been pristine.
Yeah, and it makes a huge impact. You don't even notice it until you're like, until it stops working, or
yeah,
you got to change the bag or something, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, floors are filthy.
Yeah, there's crumbs everywhere. Yeah. And it does the straight lines. So we have carpet in one of our rooms. So the mm-hmm. lines in the carpet are like we had the like
looks
super
nice.
Old Roomba for so long where it just bumps into shit until it. And it bumps into shit until it sucks up a cord and then dies. And there's a camera on it.
That's Bernie from Weekend at Bernie's.
Okay, there you go. I've never seen Weekend at Bernie's, so I don't get that reference. But like, it has a camera in it, which people are scared of. Apparently, the older ones, you can literally drive the thing via the camera. But the camera on this one is not connected to the Wi-Fi part, or so they say. And it just does, it like detected my wife's iPhone cord, and it went all the way around to the curve of the cord. Like it didn't just like, I'm not going to go there. It went all the way around the cord and like got as close as it could to it. So it's amazing. It's like well worth the money. It was like $1,500 or something crazy
that. You say it's something you save up for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One more thing about how excited I am about this is the brushes inside of it, they are silicone. And what happens with the brushes is you get hair stuck in the bearings. And on the brushes on this one, you can take the ends off and just slide the disgusting hair clumps off and put the bearings back on it. With the last one we had, you stick a knife in there and try cut out the
really?
Hair, or you buy new brushes every 6 months because you have to throw them in the garbage. So big fan.
Yeah. I like, you know, from the repairability angle, everything comes off of this, at least it does off of ours. I can get like every little piece off of it.
Yeah.
And I think that is lovely that they do that, right? It's not a black box. You can open it up. You can fix any clogs. You can really, you know, really clean it. I take mine apart and detail it, you know, once every 6 months or so just to keep it running well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, give it a nice wax job, you know. So I'm before I get into my actual sick pick, I will sick pick Weekend at Bernie's. It's
I'll have to watch it.
You know, came out in 1989. It has an incredible soundtrack. It's a breeze to watch. It's 97 minutes. Courtney and I maybe watch this movie, and I kid you not, maybe twice a year since we've been married, maybe even since we've been dating. We watch Weekend at Bernie's a lot. It's a great movie. I'm a big fan. So if you haven't seen it, watch Weekend at Bernie's, y'all. I'm going to actually sick pick, though, beyond Weekend at Bernie's, protein powder that man, protein powder stinks. You know, I've been weightlifting a long time and I always hate protein powder. I hate the whole process of it. And because of that, I consume way less protein than I probably should, given the amount of working out I'm doing. So I've recently found a hydrolyzed protein powder that mixes really well. ISO 100 by Dymatize. I don't go on like protein powder YouTube that often, but apparently this is a very popular one now. In addition to being like a great mixing protein, the flavors are really amazing. You have Fruity Pebbles, which I mixed with my oatmeal, and it tastes like Fruity Pebbles. It tastes like I'm eating Fruity Pebbles. They also have cookies and cream, like a Dunkin' Cappuccino. they have a bunch of like brand deals.
This is Earth Day Cake. The Dymatize. Oh, yeah. I have Cocoa Pebbles. This is the ISO 100 hydrolyzed. Yes.
Yeah, you have this?
Yeah, I bought this. And like,
oh my gosh.
It's so good. Like, it doesn't stink. And it doesn't make you super bloated, and it doesn't hurt your stomach. It's amazing, really.
Yeah. Okay. I'm happy to hear that because, yeah, I've tried a lot of protein powders.
Like I'm excited to have a protein shake because it's so good.
I typically dread them. So yeah, check this one out if you're into that world. If you haven't heard of this before and you need a protein shake, I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, that's the one I take. I also have these. Just the pre-made ones in my office. Mm-hmm. If I can't run up to go mix one, like when I'm recording mm-hmm. today, I'll grab one of those. But the custom shook ones are the best.
Yeah. Heck yeah. Cool. I'm going to shamelessly plug the Syntax newsletter. You can find out about the Syntax newsletter at syntax.fm/snackpack. We release two newsletters a month full of hot take tweets, interesting things that we found on the web, really highlights from these episodes. And we give you an opportunity to give more feedback about what you like, don't like about the show, as well as if you're interested in merch. We had our webmaster tee sell out instantly. If you're interested in being the first to know about merch on the store when that webmaster tee is coming back, head on over to syntax.fm/snackpack. The link is in the show notes. You can sign up and you'll get that kind of access. We don't bug you a lot, like I said, twice a month. So yeah. we're not annoying you.
Yeah. And by the time you're listening to this, the webmaster tees should be back in stock. They any day now at the time of recording. This is in December before Christmas. They are on a truck, so they're just about to be. we ordered 200 of them because they sold out in like 6 hours last time.
Yeah.
Right on. Shameless plug, westboss.com/courses. Check it on out. You want to learn a thing or two in the new year and use coupon code Syntax for $10 off. That's it for today. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Catch you later.
Peace.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.